This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. I'm actually going to start by actually going back in time, actually not that long ago, probably to sort of last year and things, and looking at what are some of the traditional sources of income we have. Because it's very easy to focus on what's new, what's coming up, and perhaps lose sight of what we should be maximising in terms of traditional sources. So, just a reminder, in terms of traditional income, fees and charges have always been quite a large part of local authority budgets, particularly important for district councils and a very large part of their income. But there are limits on the levels of fees and charges, though, that local authorities can charge, either for political reasons, been in many a council debate where we've discussed putting up home care charges, for example, and that's always a very politically sensitive area. So there are limits to how much you can actually increase charges from that. There's also issues about competition with the private sector. And I think sometimes within local government we see ourselves very much as an individual sector, very much cushioned from the outside world. If you think about things like sports centres where you perhaps have gym memberships and things, a big part of actually setting your fees and charges in there is understanding the competition, what the competition's offering and what their level of charging is. So don't ignore particularly now what the private sector's doing on that. One of the very big things we've seen around fees and charges, and particularly in areas such as planning, car parking and areas like that, is a real impact of the recession. I know this hit districts particularly hard in that those fee levels have really, really fallen off. So we need to look at how we can maximise those, where we can actually go, and hopefully be ready for an upturn. Fines and levies. We're all turning off speed cameras at the moment, so perhaps these are reducing. But I think the thing with fines and levies is they're very much dependent on statutory powers and very often have statutory limits on what we can actually charge. Rents are an interesting area, particularly having a district background again and where we own a large proportion of commercial estate. Can actually be a really, really big area and one that is very, very hard to exploit perhaps by working just as public sector alone. Certainly we're looking much more at working with partners, partnerships, possibly even sort of joint venture type vehicles to be able to maximise the amount of commercial rent we receive from properties, so we could put the investment in we needed to increase the rents. HRA shouldn't be forgotten in this. Housing, there are a number of councils where housing is very much a large part of their services. Again, here, income's controlled by rent restructuring and convergence. Gain on rents, we've had a very big impact in terms of the downturn in both the ability to generate rents, but also a greater understanding of the impact on economic development and the need to keep town centres full. Investment income, and I think investment income, there's a sort of contra to that side, which is also reducing borrowing costs. If you like, you can either have the money invested or you can use it to repay debt and reduce costs, which effectively have the same impact on budgets. Really suffering at the moment from low interest rates, not receiving much money. So at the moment, definitely sort of repayment of debt tends to look more attractive than actually holding money for investment. And also things like Iceland actually sort of gave a reminder of just the risks with holding money in foreign banks and in sort of banks. Under that, an important source of actually the money to either invest or to repay debt is property rationalisation. I think that's a really important area at the moment, and actually really making sure we're getting the most from estates to either allow us to more money to invest from sales of surplus property or to repay debt. So I think that's one area we really should not be ignoring at the moment. I put limited trade in because it's very much focused around services that local authorities provide traditionally. Done a lot of work around shared services. One thing I think it's very important to remember when you look at trade in shared services and things, and we did some work with the Society of District Treasurers around this, is that it's very much a continuum. Don't think to trade you have to set up a commercial company, a big bang, sort of some very vast project. You can actually start very small and pick one or two little services that maybe you provide better than a neighbour and just share that experience. And you can build from that and very soon add up to something significant. So I think one of the lessons definitely sort of we've seen learnt by authorities is that you don't always have to go for the big bang approach. You can actually build this up gradually. Grants is an area that's actually becoming probably less and less important to local authorities. In terms of central government grant, a large proportion of these have now been mainstreamed and are included in formula grant. In terms of EU grant eligibility, a lot of areas have been removed from that, so it's much more targeted and confined in very small areas. Third sector and sort of some of the charitable foundation grants, lottery funding, are very interesting. Certainly, I've done some work around museums, where part of the reason for looking at putting museums in trusts was because a lot of those organisations prefer to actually fund something independent of local government rather than local authority directly. So there is something around looking at those sort of periphery services, those services that may suit an independent trust, to actually give them access to third-party funding and grant funding from other organisations. That's a sort of quick run-through of where traditional income sources are. The new income sources have been, to some extent, sort of mentioned by Alexandra, but hopefully I can sort of build on them slightly. The new homes bonus is being sort of promoted as quite a big thing to encourage building. I'm not sure whether it's going to actually encourage building or encourage building where we actually want it. I think the removal of targets, certainly locally, I know the big headlines were, now we've actually got rid of the local targets, we don't need to build the houses anymore. And I think probably there are a number of communities who the incentive through new homes bonus isn't enough to actually overcome the negative publicity by vast numbers of new homes. So I'm not sure whether it will actually sort of generate the large-scale building that perhaps has been promised. I think the interesting thing about it is it's non-ring-fenced. We're very used as local authorities to work in a situation where development gain, planning gain, etc., has been very much ring-fenced on, you know, the new schools that are that a development needs, infrastructure-type projects. It can be used to actually support ongoing expenditure, to support more general expenditure, but it is for a limited life. So I think one of the dangers is that if you do use it to support more general expenditure at the end of the life, you then have a budget problem that you've built up. So I suspect it may be more sort of capital-type projects, but time will tell. Tax incremental funding. We've had the enterprise zones. I think they're a really big opportunity for those sort of city areas. I think it's harder to see how they might actually apply to the more rural areas and less within the country. And also, potentially, it could be a high-risk, high-return strategy for local authorities. To really get the most from it, I think there's going to be quite a lot of investment in infrastructure. Local authorities are going to have to accept some risks. And I'm not sure whether, as a sector, we're actually ready to accept those risks and manage those risks and almost be prepared to fail. Because to really get some of the big gains from these, I think there is that need to accept those risks. General power of competence is sort of quite a big one, and I think it will take some time for the real impact of this to be realised. All the time looking at sort of things that the general power of competence actually impacts upon, and thinking that's now available to local authorities that wasn't. So I think it'll sort of build up some momentum quite gradually. I wonder whether it will lead to additional provision of services for profit or for income sources. I think when I say for profit, that means a contribution towards fixed costs rather than profit per se. But, you know, can we actually provide services that do actually help to recover some of the corporate costs and make a contribution to overall council costs? Increased trading, I think, is probably linked to general power of competence. And I think there's a big chance here to work with some of the other sectors. We've all heard big society and third sector and how we're supposed to be working with them, community budgeting. Was there actually a chance to actually sort of trade with and work with these organisations on a more commercial footing in some areas? And I think what's in terms of increased trading and looking at how we exploit this, it really is about building on the strengths of the individual authority and which services are our particular strengths. Are there back office functions, for example, that we're particularly strong at, that we can sell to the third sector? local authority is a bonds is a big area we're doing some work at the moment on in SIPFA, and I think it's important to see it's not a revenue income source, it's a capital income source, but potentially quite a big area. We've had a number of queries about how local authorities will use this new power to issue bonds. Actually, local authorities have always had the power to issue bonds. TfL did, I can't remember whether it's £3 billion or £6 billion a couple of years ago. Birmingham City Council did the refinancing of the NEC through bonds. So local authorities have always had the power to issue bonds, but they've always been an expensive choice. Changes to the Public Works Loan Board, borrowing rates and things have made them more attractive, certainly for the bigger authorities, are now actively looking at them. Issue costs are very high, and what we're trying to do is do some work with the credit rating agencies to make it cheaper for local authorities to obtain credit ratings. And we're talking with a number of banks who are looking at the potential to offer sort of an umbrella bond, so it'll be a general local authority bond that they go out to the market with, but then can sell on parts of that to individual local authorities. So I think there's some interesting work being done there, which is largely led by the increasing cost of borrowing from the PWLB. While PWLB was cheap, it's almost why would any local authority want to look at a bond if you can actually get a ready source of cheap finance that's unlimited? So I think that's a big area and one that we'll see increasingly important in sort of coming months. Moving on to the sort of future, what we see there. I think it's quite interesting, and we're seeing some real tensions in the current government between a very, very strong localism agenda, and certainly while we're talking to officials, where before in new schemes and things there was there's a whole raft of very detailed guidance about how you might go about it, how you might implement it, often a single solution. Now it's very much about some general advice and local authorities finding their own solutions. So I think there is a real commitment to the localism agenda, but at the same time there's always that temptation to go back into sort of central policies. I think streetlights was a sort of good early example where Eric Pickles wanted local authorities to embrace the localist agenda, provided they didn't actually turn their streetlights off. And I think some of those dichotomies will actually remain. And the local funding, government funding review should be a sort of interesting one of this. We've had the announcement from CLG. What's not clear is, are we going to sort of revisit and rerun a whole big Lions and start again and effectively sort of kick it into the long grass for another 3 years? Or are we going to actually take Lions and say, actually, are there bits that this could work? Let's have a sort of pragmatic approach and see how we could actually implement some of Lions' recommendations. What's also clear, not clear, is the level of consultation there will be with the sector. We're very clear in our response to Lions that there were some real opportunities there for local government funding, particularly support very heavily any attempt to relocalise business rates, accepting that there are issues of equalisation that need to be sorted, but there's real strong pressure to put less pressure on the council tax as the only tax available locally. I think one of the big mistakes of Lions was perhaps including it, the council tax revaluation as part of it, because that was just such a politically hot potato that it sort of almost failed the rest. The issue of the self-financing council and the prospect of the self-financing council keeps sort of being mooted. You know, return of business rates, end of formula grant, councils actually allowed to sort of stand on their own 2 feet. Very much reminds me of a sort of almost a return to the old municipal councils that we read about in the sort of late 1800s, early 1900s. And I think that would be a real strength for some councils, and you could see how some councils could really actually develop that. In terms of equalisation, we're doing a lot of work around the HRA and the removal of the HRA subsidy system. And you wonder whether there's some parallels in that, where councils effectively buy themselves out or receive a sort of investment in exchange for removing themselves from long-term financial support. So are there mechanisms and things we're working on in there that could actually provide a route to self-financing councils? Co-payments are quite an interesting one. We did some work after the downturn with Solace that looked at how local authorities might actually sort of react to reduced resources. And one of the very big things coming out of that was perhaps a change and redefinition of the relationship between sort of state and the individual. I think co-payments are a tricky one. We've heard about the sort of easy council model that's being promoted with perhaps the minimum service and top-up levels. You can see how that would be very politically sensitive in that decisions about services that people receive are no longer based purely on need, but also depend slightly on how much they're able to top up. I think the danger is those sorts of thoughts sort of kick it into the long grass, rather than thinking, actually, how can we build the protections in that to support those really in need? And I think also when you look at sort of personal budgets in social services, that almost leads you to top-up model anyway, because people have their own budgets. You actually have very little control over what additional money they put in to buy services. You have the control to make sure they're buying the services with the money you give them, but there's nothing to actually stop them topping up. So I think as you move into more personal budgets, more sort of individual access to care, and local authorities being more, if you like, the gatekeeper to care rather than the provider, then co-payments become a lot easier to actually deliver. So I think there's potentially a very interesting future for local authorities, and one that actually potentially gives them a lot more autonomy from central government than they have at the moment. So I think on that I've put promote, and I think one of the things we need to be doing as a sector is really lobbying at the moment and sort of pushing on the doors that are slightly ajar to try and make sure we maximise our future freedoms. And that was...